Hey Paseo, welcome back to another episode of the Paseo Podcast. Hopefully this has been helpful for you as you've been doing the reading alongside us. Today I'm here with Jomel, and I know this is probably an old joke because we get mixed up for one another at times, but we also haven't, I don't think we've been in the same room at the same time like this in front
this
of people.
So evidence that we're not the same person.
We are not the same person.
Take Nor are we related as far as we know.
As far as we know. But now we're excited to be here, be here with you, looking at John 10. We'll spend our time there, and actually our listener question as well comes out of John 10 as well. Yeah. But before we begin, we like to start off our time with tips for better reading. And today is a little bit different than we've had in the past. We're looking at comparing Bible translations.
And oh, yeah.
To be honest, I've been pretty stuck to using the ESV at times when I don't understand. I might look at different translations, but I know talking offline a little bit earlier, you had shared about, you'd shared a little bit about those differences. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on using those?
Yeah, those Bible translation is always a funny topic for me. I know we can't go too long into this, but I grew up in a unique world of one version only. Mm-hmm. So that was the college seminary I went to was just one version. They were very dogmatic. So it took a long time afterwards to really understand, like, well, what are the differences and what is the beauty or the help of using more than one? And one of the things that I think we really strongly, the goal is not find the best superior version. I think that there is something divisive and something that can be, it's unhealthy if you're trying to find a superior version. I think there's healthy to find your favorite. I mean, I think we both have favorites, but I think it's more important understanding the science of how are different translations translated, why are they translated a certain way, and I know in our notes it talks about like highlighting the difference between formal and dynamic, because there's kind of like two main distinctives of a version is the text and the translation style. Almost all modern translations are pretty much from the same text, so it's translation style where it kind of differs.
Yeah, and so when we talk about that formal and dynamic, the formal is kind of that word for word, right?
More
like
literal.
Trying to go back to kind of the original language and trying to give a picture of what it said exactly.
So that would be like the NASB, the ESV, and the King James and the New King James.
Yeah, and then the dynamic is more thought for thought, right? What does that mean, thought for thought?
Yeah, I mean, thought for thought, as opposed to word for word. There's just a little bit more thought, more context, more cultural context put into it, and you see some of that within the words.
Yeah.
And there's also paraphrase, which is one that, you know, like the message.
The message, yeah.
Yeah, it's very different, but.
For sure. Yeah, and all are helpful in helping us to understand kind of what the overall message is, right?
Yeah.
I think I was looking at Luke 9:44.
Yeah.
And it says something along the lines of Jesus is speaking to his disciples and he says, "Let this sink into your ears," right? Which is what the literal translation is.
Yeah.
But some of the thought for thought is, "Hey, listen to this and hold on to it."
Let it sink into your ears. Listen and hold on. I love that.
Yeah.
That's and really so, good. Even the text that we're going to study today, John 10, you're going to see in the formal translations in the King James or in the ESV, Jesus calls himself a door, which is the literal Greek word, like the most, you know, Shakespearean times is when a lot of this was translated, like the most literal translation is a hinged door, but culturally it wasn't a hinged door. And then you're going to see in the, more dynamic translations, it's the gate.
Yeah.
And it's not literal, but it makes more sense and it paints a better word picture. So that's just an example of why it helps to look at multiple translations. And like with people, when people get hung up, I always say, if you're getting hung up on trying to find the best one, I hope you don't plan on only reading the Bible one time in your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I hope you don't plan on only using one and trying to get all of your theology. And every translation has some strengths. I don't like to say weaknesses. There's no like theological contradictions, but maybe some things you won't see as deep in others. So man, that's the beauty of like living in 2026, you got some physical Bibles with like four different translations in it. You can pull up on your computer, have it, you know, do that whole thing for your studies. It's a good tool.
Yeah. Well, speaking of John 10, why don't we go ahead and jump into it? John 9, Jesus has just healed a man who was blind from birth. Mm-hmm. And the religious leaders are rejecting this miracle. Like they don't like it. They don't want to have anything to do with Jesus. And John 10 is this continuation of that conversation. Just right before this, Jesus is interacting with the blind man and says, hey, do you believe in the Son of Man? And you're looking at him. And then the Pharisees is kind of listening in this conversation. And Jesus says, for judgment, I came into this world that those who do not see may see and those who see may become blind. And the Pharisees ask, are we also blind? So this is kind of the answer to this kind of conversation. Yeah. So, Jomel, if you would sure. you read for us John 10, 1 through 21?
All of it. All right. Since you're the host. All right. John 10, 1. I'll try to tone down my preaching voice. Verse 1, he says, verily, truly, I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own name, his own sheep by name, and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, truly, very truly, I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then wolves attack the flock and scatter it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall one flock and one shepherd. There shall be. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down on my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. The Jews who heard these words were again divided. Many of them said, he is a demon possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him? But others said, these are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?
Yeah, so we see a lot of imagery here in passage as Jesus is describing himself and what he's come to do. And two of those that we see, right, are, like you mentioned, the gate, and then he also calls himself the good shepherd. Mm-hmm. And we were talking a little bit about this earlier, but why does Jesus describe himself in this light? Why does he choose to use these metaphors to describe himself?
That's a good question. So I was doing a little bit of research ahead of time, and I think it's so deep, right? I think there's a lot of things going on. I think for one, this is a passage where he is clearly making messianic claims. Mm-hmm. Like he's being pretty clear and distinct. And he uses two separate metaphors. So first he says that the shepherd, the actual shepherd is let in by the gatekeeper, mm-hmm. right? So that's probably, that's more modern to what the era in which they're talking about. And when they don't get that, they don't understand, like, well, what are you saying? It seems like he's making more of a messianic analogy, because when he refers to himself as the shepherd who is the gate, I was doing some research. You know, a lot of shepherd language is used throughout the Psalms, which mm-hmm. is our summer series right now. It's kind of appropriate that we're talking about right? So David makes a lot of messianic claims about the shepherd. In this New Testament time, a lot of the sheep and the sheep pens were more established buildings, right? Like more established fences mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. gates with hinging doors and gatekeepers, right? In David's time, not as technologically advanced, So it was like makeshift, like these makeshift sheet pens, and think, you know, just raggedy wooden
sticks
fences
and briar.
Exactly. And a lot of times, if there wasn't enough time to make a hinging door, what would they would do in David's time was the shepherd, or at least a good shepherd, would literally lay down where the gate would be and be the gate.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to layer. I'm going to be the one. You know, I just imagine some dude taking a nap, but nope, not you. Nope, you could just pull him back. And I'm thinking about like when I'm wrestling my kids, and I'm just laying down, and I'm up. Oh, don't jump off that. No, stay over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep your cousin over there.
Yeah.
Jesus is making this analogy. He's making this like that. That's me. Yeah. I'm old school. I am the gate.
Yeah.
And I am the good shepherd. So he's picking it up, but there he's. He's putting it down, but they're not picking it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we learn, I mean, from this imagery, much about Jesus, right? That there is, I mean, he'll say that there is only one way through the Father, right? And that's through me. So like you said, literally like you can come in, right? Or, hey, that is not one of our sheep, right? That is not one of our flock, right? And then a good shepherd, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? He says that the good shepherd lays down his life.
Yeah.
Right. And he contrasts that with the hired hand.
Yep. Right? The hired hand, the thief. Mm-hmm. I think he's making some allusion to, I think, Ezekiel 34 that talks about like the corrupt shepherds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's accusing the Pharisees of being all these things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are not yours, but you treat them like they're yours.
Yeah.
And the real ones are aware enough to, they're not buying your stuff.
Yeah.
Like they know it. Like there's a reason why. So many of these good people, like they hear what you're saying and they don't feel right with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as we look at these pictures, what maybe is something that most stands out to you that we're learning about Jesus?
Yeah, I think I love the idea of almost the takeaway of for us, right? Us knowing who the good shepherd is.
Mm-hmm.
Just this desire to know the shepherd. For this desire for, like, do we recognize the voice of the shepherd?
Yeah.
You know, we were talking not too long ago just about, you know, the world that we live in of false religions and cults. And Jesus talks so much about false prophets. And how do you know who's a thief? How do you know who's the false shepherd? And don't get me wrong. I think it's okay to, like, study false religions if you're, like, in a Bible college or if you do, like, a series on cults and stuff like that. But I don't think that's the priority. I don't think the priority is you study the false shepherd.
Yeah.
I think the priority is you get really, really close to the real one.
Yeah, you're helping helping people and teaching them to understand how to discern like this the real voice of Jesus.
You don't have to know that much about the different false religions to it, when you are just close to the truth.
Yeah.
To know, like, I don't know what you're talking about, man, but that ain't it.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of put up your, you know, guard that truth.
Mm-hmm.
They say, like, with bank tellers, right? Like, they don't expose bank tellers to a whole lot of fake money. They just surround
bank tellers
with a whole lot of
what is
real
actually
money.
Real, right?
Exactly.
So that way they can pick that out. Yeah. I've got this, I remember this video I saw some years ago, and I can't remember where it was. Maybe it was in, like, Sweden or something, but... just the idea of the shepherd's voice, right?
Yeah.
And there's this hillside with sheep, and people are with the shepherd or with the farmer, right? And he's telling them, hey, this is how I call them, and everybody's giving it a go. It doesn't matter how loud they get, right? Yeah. It doesn't matter how close they try to match his cadence, right? It isn't until the shepherd, hey, sheep, you know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they come running down the hills because they know his voice.
I love that.
Yeah, do we know Jesus' voice in that way? And he says that that his sheep will know his voice.
I'm thinking about the last scene in Air Bud. I can't help it. You remember that movie?
No.
The last scene in Air Bud. Okay, you guys know what I'm talking about. And like the evil clown that's trying to steal the dog is like, I've been with him all this time. And the
And then they're in the courtroom.
And they're like, let's see who he goes to. Has nothing to do with this, but it's just... I guess that's something to do with it.
They both call him over.
They recognize.
And he recognizes. Yeah. He recognizes the voice. Yeah, for sure.
Maybe that's just the way my brain goes. Not the right direction sometimes.
Yeah. Well, we also see here in our passage that he says that he has a flock and that he's got some sheep that are still not here and that he's got to go get them and bring them to the flock. What does that mean, that
sure.
that one flock?
I am pretty confident that he is giving early allusions to being the God of the Gentiles just as much as God of the Jew.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, we were talking about it. I was preaching about it just a few weeks ago. Now, this idea of all nations and all people, like, it wasn't ever anything new, but it kept confusing people, which just really shows our human nature is we just human nature do not like the thought of outsiders. But he, I think this is the illusion. He's like, it's just this repeated idea. Yeah. He's coming for all of us.
Yeah, it doesn't just stay here. There are still some people that need to come and belong.
Even the Filipino sheep pen.
Even the Filipino sheep pen.
That's how he gets them.
That's how we know his voice.
That's how he called us.
That's how he called us. Yeah. Well, hey, come real quick, just to come back to this, and then we'll move on to our listener question. We talked a little bit about the Jesus being the good shepherd versus the hired hand, right?
Yeah.
Like, what do we take away from that? What does Jesus do that the hired hand doesn't?
I think he's making a direct allusion to just the previous chapter you were talking about in John 9, where, you know, good things are happening, but these Pharisees, the hired hands, right? They're tripping out. They don't like it. I don't like it because it affects their bottom line.
Oh, for sure.
It affects their influence. It affects them. And he's making this direct comparison of the good shepherd is a sacrificial leader.
Yeah.
Like, the good shepherd lays down. And, you know, I'm thinking about that Old Testament analogy of laying down in the muck, not lording over. I think it's such a good truth about who Jesus is and what he's not.
Yeah.
He wants to sacrifice and know us.
Yeah. I think that's a shepherd worth following.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, hey, let's jump over here to the listener question, because it's actually in John 10 as well.
Perfect.
That's John 10, 33. So let me just read this question here. It says, in John 10, 33, the religious leaders want to stone Jesus because they say he is claiming to be God. But then in verse 34 and 38, Jesus quotes Psalm 82 and talks about other people being called gods. Mm-hmm. Was Jesus claiming to be God, or was he denying it?
Sure.
Which I can see the confusion in that. Actually, when I went to go read the psalm myself, I was like, I don't particularly understand the claim that he's making.
Yep.
But then you see, hey, he's not making the claim that he's not. He's saying that, hey, if they called them this, right? I'm calling myself the son of, you know, if I'm the son of God, look at what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. It's only wrong if it's not true, right?
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I had to do some research because I was like, why is he using Psalm 82? And what does that say about this? Because this is a very direct messianic claim. I mean, like, John 10 is as good as it gets. Mm-hmm. Speaking of false religions, I remember engaging in a conversation when I was doing youth ministry, and there was like a young guy in a cult, let's just call it that, and he was challenging students in the club and trying to be argumentative. Mm-hmm. And I just confronted him. I said, hey, man, like, we accept people from all different churches, but you're out of pocket with this because you're saying Jesus isn't God. And he goes, well, Jesus is a great guy. He never claims to be God.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hit him with John 10:30, I and the Father are one.
Yeah.
And he's just speechless, right? So he didn't come back. But there is just such a direct messianic claim. But the counter argument that a lot of people use is, well, he quotes Psalm 82. And in Psalm 82, the argument here is he's pretty much saying, like, hey, anybody who's speaking on behalf of God, you guys are all gods. So in my research, what it was saying was Jesus using something called an argument from the lesser to the greater.
Mm.
He's not saying that I am not God. He's not saying I am not equally God. But he's saying, hey, man, listen, you're about to stone me for claiming to be God. To just direct or just to address this argument, to go from the lesser, like, technically, if you want to be technical, according to your book, our book, in the Psalms, it does say this. I looked up the Hebrew for Psalm 82. It's Elohim, and Elohim is not just, because in the other psalm I read, he refers to pagan gods as Elohim. The psalmist refers to pagan gods as Elohim. It's just a general term for, like, deities.
Yeah.
It is not, and that's what makes Yahweh a special word. Because Yahweh is our God.
Yeah, he's not amongst them.
Yeah. Yeah, so very different, right? So he's not saying that he's, you know, like, well, I'm not Yahweh. He's not saying that. But he's saying, hey, man, like, technically, by your book, I'm an Elohim too, dude. Like, I'm a voice of God. I'm a speaker. Mm-hmm. You can't deny that.
Yeah.
But he's not leaving it at the argument of lesser. He's saying, I qualify to not get executed right now under the lowest requirement just because I'm a voice of God. But he's doubling down. And I think the best way to prove that is just keep reading.
Yeah.
Just keep reading. It's like the way they respond. Yeah, they're ready to kill him for it.
Yeah.
So he's not backtracking. He's doubling down.
Yeah, I think we see that. We see that again in verse 39, right?
Yep.
So after kind of this discourse, he says, hey, believe in the works that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I am in the Father, right? So he repeats it again. And the Pharisee again pick up, or they don't pick up stones, but they're seeking to arrest him.
Yeah,
he's like, okay, you want to keep going down that route? Yeah, yeah, for
exactly.
Sure.
Like he's almost saying like, hey, like listen, you might not get all of it right now, but you can at least accept the fact that I am here on behalf of God and I'm doing something good. Mm-hmm. And I even think in like discipleship, right? I think some people get hung up on some big questions.
Yeah.
And I think our human tendency is to try to answer the big questions. And at least in my experiences, I think when I try to answer the big questions, sometimes it can create more confusion and more doubt. But I think Jesus is like, hey, just keep watching. Keep watching. Like, I'm going to show you I am who you think I am. And they don't like that.
Yeah.
Even though he's not giving them exactly what they're looking for yet, he's given them enough and they don't like it. So yeah, he's definitely not backing down from being God. It's an invitation to just come watch.
Come watch what I do.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Paseo, hopefully this has been a blessing to you. It's been a blessing to me as I get to sit here with Jomel. Much of what you saw today is what we do
every day.
Every day when we're together in the office.
It's a little goofier outside of the recording studio.
Yeah, but blessings to you as you continue to read, continue to ask good questions, and continue to tune in as we learn together from Scripture.